I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll focus on a program that aims to help housing choice voucher users move to more affluent neighborhoods. First, one day after New Jersey Governor Chris Christie failed to sign legislation that would have helped Atlantic City, local officials are planning an emergency meeting next week to consider declaring bankruptcy. Details from WHYY's Phil Gregory.
Mayor Don Gardian says filing for bankruptcy would allow Atlantic City to reduce its costs and improve its financial situation.
We come out with a clean slate. We drop about $40 million in debt alone, and we renew every collective bargaining agreement.
Gardian cautions, though, it could be a bad precedent for other towns to consider. The state would have to approve a bankruptcy filing, and Assembly Speaker Vinny Prieto says that's something he wants to avoid.
When you do that, then your bond rating really goes down. Your creditors get a lot less money. If you could avoid that, that would be the right thing to do.
Council President Marty Small says Atlantic City needs financial help, but Senate President Steve Sweeney has said it won't get more bailouts from the state. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Phil Gregory, WHYY News.
Can a convicted killer from Pennsylvania help end the country's death penalty laws? Activists who long sought to abolish capital punishment are counting on a murder case from Lockhaven to bring a landmark decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports.
In June, Supreme Court Justices Stephen Breyer and Ruth Bader Ginsburg made comments amounting to, you know what? Maybe it's time the court hears a case asking whether the death penalty comports with modern values. The court hasn't tackled the issue since 1976.
It's not that the death penalty is morally reprehensible, although a lot of people think it is. It is that the death penalty has so many problems that it can't be done in a constitutional manner.
That's former Philadelphia public defender Mark Bookman, who now heads the Atlantic Center for Capital Representation. He says after Breyer and Ginsburg made those comments and dissenting opinions on another case, attorneys fighting the death penalty got excited. They started looking for possible petitioners, and they found Shonda Walter of Lockhaven. She's been sitting on death row since a jury convicted her of murdering her elderly neighbor with a hatchet in 2005.
I don't think that anyone is suggesting that what Shonda Walter was convicted of is not a terrible crime. The question goes beyond the specific facts of her case.
Bookman believes she had lousy attorneys, but says the petition is making the philosophical argument that she deserves life in prison, not the death penalty, because capital punishment is uncivilized.
We don't keep a failed public policy in place because of visceral facts that may offend us.
Though Breyer and Ginsburg seem to want to take up the question, they would need approval from four of the nine justices. They're expected to meet again soon on whether to hear the case. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Cortina Faust has been trying to find a way to move out of Coatesville in Chester County for years.
The last straw was when my son was walking to school and got beat down by like five kids. He ended up with a neck brace and a broken ankle.
Faust relies on housing choice vouchers, formerly known as Section 8, to pay the rent, so moving to a better location is a struggle. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports on a regional effort to make that easier, as well as the roadblocks it's hit.
Let's start by stating the obvious. Quality schools, jobs, and wealth are not spread evenly over the map. Economic opportunity is just plain better in some towns, cities, and neighborhoods. The mother of four boys, Cortina Faust, says she was concerned about her son's prospects if they stayed in Coatesville. The city has a history of gang-related violence, and its schools are consistently on Pennsylvania's list of the lowest performers. After 10 years of putting her name into the hat, Faust received a Federal Housing Choice Voucher, or HCV, and ran with the opportunity.
I was calling the housing authority, and then finally, like I said, I just got on the bus and started walking. I was one of those eager persons. Did you find anything? Is there no list out?
After a lot of legwork, she found a place in Downingtown, only about a 15-minute drive from Coatesville, but far more affluent. Her two older sons are now in college, and she says she doesn't think she'd be in the same place if she hadn't moved.
I probably would be a very miserable, probably a mourning mom, because a lot of boys, my older boys' age, are either dead, selling drugs, or in jail.
Faust was resourceful, but she was also lucky. The first landlord she found to take her voucher in Downingtown just happened to be her son's football coach. The federal government has been trying to take luck out of the equation through what it calls mobility programs. Spurred on by advocates from a group called First Suburbs, Delaware, Montgomery, Chester, and Philadelphia counties landed a $500,000 grant to start a mobility program in 2012. The goal was modest. Start by moving about 50 people in the four counties from areas of high poverty to areas of lower poverty and more opportunity. Their new homes could either be in the same county or outside of it. Before it could get off the ground, however, that partnership collapsed, says Joel Johnson, executive director of the Montgomery County Housing Authority.
The PHA essentially kicked out Montgomery County, Delaware County.
Not so fast, says Kelvin Jeremiah, head of the Philadelphia Housing Authority.
To the extent that they were not particularly interested in participating, they were raising issues that prevented them from participating.
Montgomery and Delaware counties ended up on the outside. Affordable housing advocate and Norristown councilman Marlon Milner says that meant some of the areas with the highest need for a program like this couldn't participate.
Regardless of who did the shedding, the end result was that Norristown did get shut out.
In the end, only Chester and Philadelphia counties are a part of the program. Chester is a mix of rural and suburban areas and has the highest per capita income of any county in the state. Meanwhile, poverty rates can top 80% in some zip codes in Philly. Dale Gravett, executive director of the Housing Authority of Chester County, says the results were modest.
We had very few. It was like just a handful that actually moved here in Chester County.
Rents in Chester County are just too high to be affordable, even with the help of a voucher, he says. Kelvin Jeremiah, head of the Philadelphia Housing Authority, says his organization had facilitated about 65 moves to low-poverty areas so far. In both places, a much larger number of Housing Choice voucher holders are still living in places where poverty is higher than the surrounding neighborhoods. And when it comes to thinking about who gets opportunities, race is the elephant in the room, says Milner from Norristown.
It's no accident that Norristown has the largest percentage and numeric number of African Americans of any jurisdiction in Montgomery County, and at the same time has the largest number of HCVs. Right? It's not coincidental.
Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled disproportionately subsidizing housing in a way that results in segregation by race is unacceptable. Housing authorities are now on the hook to fix it, and mobility programs might be a key tool in solving that larger problem. Laura Benshoff, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, the Wolf administration says its proposal to require natural gas drillers to reduce methane emissions will help make Pennsylvania a national leader in efforts to combat global warming. Pennsylvania Environmental Secretary John Quigley says requiring the industry to reduce methane gas at well pads, compressor stations, and processing facilities in the Marcellus Shale could result in a 40% reduction in emissions. The Department of Environmental Protection is developing a new permit for operators, requiring them to use best available technology to detect and plug leaks of methane, a powerful greenhouse gas that contributes to warming. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney will not lobby to eliminate DROP, the city's controversial deferred retirement option plan. DROP gives city workers and some elected officials the option to start receiving pension payments after picking a retirement date 4 years in the future. Those payments are deposited into a fund, then paid out in a lump sum when the enrollee retires. When he was a city councilman, Kenney wanted to get rid of DROP because of the cost and the potential for elected officials to abuse the perk. The news comes after embattled City Commissioner Anthony Clark enrolled in DROP shortly after being re-elected as the commission chair. 32 degrees at 6:15. You're listening to NewsWorks tonight on WHYY. Cloudy skies overnight, low 23 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Thursday's high, 36. Still ahead, a new theater in Philadelphia imagines itself as more than a mere performance space.
A place where artists come to talk about new plays, to exchange new plays, to read, write, devise, rehearse, and attend new plays.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Financial news changes by the very minute. Domestic and global markets are crazy.
China's not about to move away from buying U.S. Treasuries.
The European Central Bank wading into the Spanish and Italian government bond market today.
The whole debt ceiling debate made us look dysfunctional. We all know that.
That's okay, though, because we're here. Marketplace. It's the business show for the rest of us. It's from APM, American Public Media.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Fox Chase Cancer Center, part of Temple Health, supports WHYY and Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. Gynecologic oncologists at Fox Chase Cancer Center perform complex surgeries for patients with cervical cancer. Fox Chase doctors are also actively involved in developing new therapies for treating cervical cancer. Through clinical trials, they are able to offer patients access to promising treatments and experimental therapies that may not be available elsewhere. Now offering next-day business appointments. Learn more at foxchase.org.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Pennsylvania's smaller municipalities are increasingly getting out of the business of financing their own police departments. Let's look at the trend with Christine Manganis. She reported on the topic for PublicSource.org. Christine, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let's be clear. These towns are not getting out of the notion of policing their residents. They're not opting for a lawless town.
No, they're not opting for a lawless town. There's basically what I found was to be two options. A lot of the municipalities would either choose to have state police patrol. State police would just answer the calls that go through, so the calls would go straight to state police, or they would opt to partner with a neighboring municipality, and they would work out a contract with that municipality to get coverage.
Does the contract have to be worked out with state police, or is that more or less free?
With the state police, it's free. So whenever they're disbanding their police force, they can choose the state police, whether they think they'll get enough coverage that way, and that is free. And with another municipality or a neighboring township or borough, they will work out a contract and pay a little bit of money. But it's still less than what they were paying before.
Pennsylvania has some 2,500 municipalities, and apparently the Pennsylvania State Police currently cover at least half of them. To what extent is that trend continuing?
Yeah, they cover half so far, and they even do part-time coverage for more than 400 as well. So that's total 65% of municipalities state police covers, whether it's full-time or part-time. It's still a growing trend. Just from January 2014 to October of 2015, 25 more disbanded and now depend on the state police full-time.
Christine, is the decision based inordinately on finances or lack thereof, or are there other considerations as well?
You know, there might be more consideration, but from the ones that I have researched and gone through, it's been strictly financial.
What are the arguments against making the change, though?
The arguments, a municipality out here that I worked with in Pittsburgh was Wilkinsburg. They still have their own police force, but they've been looking into disbanding and depending on the city for coverage. Talking with business owners and residents and going to their council meeting, their sense of community would be lost. So they're worried about, you know, the jewelry store owner, he sees a policeman in there once a week that he knows and he feels safe. So I think sense of community is huge in what the residents would miss the most. Who knows, the response times could be affected as well if they're coming from a neighboring community where the state police couldn't get there quickly enough.
So to what extent is this putting undue pressure then perhaps on the state police force?
I think that it's putting more pressure on them as more municipalities have seen, you know, neighboring municipalities depend on the state police, that they're starting to do the same. So with more and more, they're having to cover more distances, they're having to cover more calls, and that could affect them in the long run.
Is there evidence that indeed state police only answer some of the dispatch calls and then sending the rest on to neighboring boroughs?
I think that the state police is a great organization, but through my research, I was able to work with Kilbuck Township, who is now contracted under Ohio Township Police Department. They originally relied on the state police for coverage, which in turn they paid nothing. But, you know, some of the times the state police weren't able to answer the calls because they wouldn't be able to get there in time. So the call was dispatched to Ohio Township regardless. So, and then Kilbuck ended up having to pay money anyway. So that's when they worked out with Ohio Township that it would be the best deal to work with Ohio Township as opposed to the state police.
Is this trend principally or exclusively taking place in the much smaller municipalities, or do you see it in more middle-sized or larger-sized towns and cities across the state?
So whenever municipalities decide to disband, it's usually a smaller municipality, especially rural, as opposed to urban. Wilkinsburg, for example, is 2.3 square miles. A neighborhood out here called Glenfield, they have less than 100 residents, so they depend on the state police. So size has something, is a huge deal. Some of the ones that are disbanding are only employing one or two officers full time, so it's not a huge loss as opposed to, you know, a larger community letting go so many and having to cover so much more distance.
Christine, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Reporter Christine Mangasas wrote on this topic for PublicSource.org. A new theater space opens in Center City, Philadelphia this week in what used to be a hotel ballroom. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that it's designed to be a hub for developing new plays.
Workers at The Drake, an apartment building near 16th and Spruce, are putting the final touches on this building. At the same time, two theater companies are rehearsing for their respective opening nights this week. It's the kind of constant activity Seth Rosin hopes will continue. Rosin is the artistic director of Interact Theater, and this new theater space is his vision. The lobby is a really big part of it. These guys are knocking out old pane windows that were inexplicably painted black. With new glass, Rosin says the lobby will be filled with natural light.
This has been a very exciting dimension of this space, in some ways more than other things, because we haven't had anything like this in the past 18 years. We didn't have control of our lobby in our previous home. We can cultivate this exactly the way we want it.
Rosin had been renting space for 18 years at the Adrian Theater in Rittenhouse Square. Here, he wants to invite the public into the lobby all day, even when no performances are happening.
This is what the building is about. It's about celebrating new plays. It's a home for plays and playwrights, a place where artists come to talk about new plays, to exchange new plays, to read, write, devise, rehearse, and attend new plays.
The building houses two theaters, 75 and 120 seats each. It will be home for five resident theater companies. They were invited based on their dedication to producing new work. One of those companies is the Simpatico Theater Project, now producing a play called The It Girl about the silent film star Clara Bow. It's been in development for 4 years. The director of Simpatico is Alan Radway, who will share ticketing, promotion, audience, and overhead with his fellow residents.
There's strength in community, and I think that's kind of a focus of the venture. So the Drake is going to become a destination for new work, hopefully nationally, but certainly for regional playwrights, New York included.
The five resident companies are each guaranteed a theater for three productions a year. The rest of the time, the theater will be rented to outside companies. Before it even opened, it was already booked solid through July. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
WHYY's new community storytelling project, Every Zip Philadelphia, highlights community events across the city. Last month, a severed pig's head was hurled at the Al-Aqsa Islamic Society Mosque. Investigators are still trying to determine who was behind the act of desecration. In this Zip postcard produced by Alex Lewis, let's visit Al-Aqsa for a joyous occasion, Community Paint Day.
My name is Paris Stancel. I work for the Mural Arts Program. We're here at the Al-Aqsa Mosque on a paint day. It's where everybody from the community can come and paint. And I was asked to do a design and to look at it. You have two big windows on each on the left and the right, and you have a tree in the center. For me, it looks monumental, also spiritual. The colors that are inspired by Islamic temples and mosques are basically green, light green, turquoise, dark blue, and also gold. It's brought a lot of communities together. Like you see here today, you have a lot of different communities coming in here, you know, not just from the Islamic faith, but people from all over.
On the radio, not television.
It's actually beautiful. My name is Nadadeeb. I'm originally from Palestine, a place called Ramallah.
and I live here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're here at this event, at this art event today with all my neighbors and my friend and family to have sloppy people, artistic people, little kids, adults put in their art, and you won't know who did this piece. That's the best thing about it. You look at it and it's beautiful.
It's about inspiring people, you know? I think that's what art should be about. Inspiring us to be better human beings.
That was Paris Stancel of Mural Arts and Nada Deeb of the Al-Aqsa Islamic Society in zip code 19122. The postcard is a part of Every Zip Philadelphia, a new collaborative of WHYY and AIR, the Association of Independence and Radio. There's another community paint day this Saturday at the Al-Aqsa Islamic Society. Finally this evening, artist, filmmaker, and Philadelphia favorite son David Lynch turned 70 today. And although the Twin Peaks creator time here was brief, living in the city's Fairmount neighborhood for 5 years, he left a large impact. The side of the neighborhood where he lived has even adopted the name Eraserhead after his landmark film of the same title. And Lynch still claims Philly as a major influence. He explains that in a discussion with the Bryn Mawr Film Institute.
It had a beautiful mood. In the atmosphere, there was fear, there was violence, there was despair and sadness, there was a feeling of insanity and a kind of a knowledge of corruption. This kind of seeped into me.
And even after all the years, Lynch's ability to see beauty in the darkest parts of life still resonates with Philadelphians. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.